All right, everyone. Thank you for being here today, and welcome to our inaugural MedAir Aviation Security Podcast. My name is Ryan Brockhaus, and I'm the Aviation and Maritime Security Supervisor based in our Phoenix, Arizona office. This new podcast format is designed to provide valuable aviation-specific information to our clients in a short discussion format. These conversations will be recorded and available to clients on a monthly basis, which each design to provide more in-depth insights on single subjects related to BGA and commercial aviation security. Today's topic of discussion is airspace security in and around major conflict zones. More specifically, what kind of weapon systems are out there in these conflict zones that pose a threat to civil aviation? Now, we at MedAir find this specific topic rather fitting given the major geopolitical dynamic shifts over the past few months. To lead us through this discussion today, I'm pleased to have Adele Dunlop, who is our Senior Aviation and Maritime Security Specialist based in our Dubai office. Adele, great to have you here.
Great to be here, Ryan. Thanks for the invite.
Fantastic. Now let's dive right in. There's been a lot of geopolitical instability over the last few years, particularly in the Middle East region and in Eastern Europe with the ongoing conflict in Ukraine that began way back in February of 2022. But there are other parts of the world that may be overlooked by some clients and some departments, which may pose a risk to civil aviation. So can you provide us some insights on these?
Absolutely, Ryan. What I would say is that we at MedAir provide a broad geopolitical outlook to our client base as best as possible. There are the obvious conflict zones in and around the world that most of our clients will be aware of. But we at MedAir are continually looking at potential other hotspots around the world. And sometimes these may be in places like Central or Southern America or in the African continent. And so what we're really looking at is the potential risk factors. If we think that there are going to be some airspace issues, airspace deconfliction issues, airspace closure issues, and what we want to be able to provide to the client is an understanding that we're not just solely focused on the conflict zones of the last few months, but also looking at potential hotspots for the future so that we can provide guidance, mitigation advice to the clients in order for them to make robust decisions about operating over airspaces in other areas of the global environment.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And to put that in perspective, our services and advisement span the globe. It is not specific to a specific region or a particular conflict. So absolutely right. I mean, our services span the globe and cover any type of, let's say, aviation-driven subjects. So that was great insight. Now for the ongoing conflicts, though, we see that there's various state and non-state actors that have been able to possess more advanced missile systems over the last couple of years. Now, these missile systems and rockets, they can be used both for offensive strikes on their said adversaries, or even can be used for air defense. But what we've seen is technology advance quite a bit over the last few years. So can you tell us a little bit about these systems? Who has them and what threats do they specifically pose to civil aviation aircraft or civil aircraft that may be traversing in or around these conflict zones?
Of course, Ryan. Yeah. I mean, we at MedAir have been following these systems that have been coming into the conflict zones for some time now. What we would say that as of around 2023, there was reporting that the Houthis in Yemen were in possession of the Fatah 110 ballistic missile. And this is assessed to have an operational range of 300 kilometres, which is about 186 miles. Now, that has been documented, but also loitering munitions obtained through some of the Houthi logistical channels have also been confirmed. And these include the Shahed 136, which has been extensively used not only in the Yemen conflict, but also by forces in Ukraine since February 2022. More advanced surface-to-air missiles, such as the Mirage missile, which is capable of engaging aircraft above flight level 260, have also been documented within Yemen as of 2022. More recently, though, Ryan, and what's been quite interesting is that there have been some new reporting sources of the newly termed Palestine 2 hypersonic ballistic missile, which is designed for long range, high speed strikes and capable of bypassing the Israeli integrated air defence system. The missile has started to garner a lot of international attention and more recently was used in the last month alone against a power plant in Haifa in Israel. It is based on the Fatah 110, but it has an extended range of out to 2,150 kilometres with a 500 kilogram warhead. What I would say is that one of the trends that we are seeing within the conflict zones, Ryan, is that range is being prioritised over the explosive warhead. So what we're seeing is a modification of these missiles so that they are getting the range to go into the conflict zones, but with maybe less weight within it from the actual explosive warhead.
That's really interesting, Adele. Now, would you also consider this the exchange of range for accuracy as well? Because I have heard and we have received some reports that this new hypersonic ballistic missile, the Palestine 2, has indeed more than enough range to reach really anywhere in Israel, but has shown at this point in time to be incredibly inaccurate. And the other thing I wanted to kind of mention here is with these hypersonic systems, prior to, let's say, the last year or two, we had been accustomed of what we would say, compared to the United States, peer rivals or near peer rivals to be in possession of these. So it's really interesting to see smaller state actors or even some non-state actors now suddenly in possession of these systems. But anyway, yeah, I just wanted to get your thoughts on the accuracy of the Palestine 2.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Ryan. I think that there is a prioritization over range rather than accuracy. But I think that in time, this is something that will come with experience, that as they're able to get more of these missiles into the region, then they will be able to hone their training and tactics. And what we will see is as they become more attuned with how the missile is actually operating, then we'll see an increase in its accuracy if it continues to be used.
Okay, these are some good points. Now, you mentioned Israel's integrated air defense system, which has gained notoriety, obviously, since the October 7th attacks in 2023. And no doubt that the integrated air defense system that Israel has been online for quite some time, and it's been modified over the years. But can you give us a little background about those various capabilities of the Israel's IADs and whether the system pose a threat to civil aviation?
So, as you mentioned, it has been quite a notorious system, and it's certainly something that the Israeli government is keen to to push that it has a well-integrated air defence system, that it is a made up of layers so that it can target from the short range out to almost the ultra long range systems that come into to the Israeli airspace. And as you also mentioned, it's been around for quite a long time. So I think more recently, the Israeli Defense Forces have been keen to modify it, upgrade it, get more systems out there on the ground, as they felt that also their adversaries had potentially been changing some of their tactics, and obviously the integration of things like the Palestine 2 missile. So let's go into the layered approach that the Israeli IADS is made up of. So we've got the Iron Dome. This has been around for decades and has been part of the system almost since its infancy. This has a range out to 70 kilometres, and it's strategically designed to target short range missiles incoming, and it has been very successful within the last 12 to 18 months. The next layer would be the David Sling, which this has a range out to 300 kilometres, and that's used for medium range missile defence. Then you've got the Arrow missile defence system, and this has a range out to almost 2,500 kilometres, and this is long range missile defence. And this is something that actually we don't see in use quite a lot of, or certainly it seems to be the Iron Dome and the David Sling that is used more often with the missiles that have been coming in more recently, certainly over the last 6 to 12 months. It seems to be these first two layers that have been responsible for intercepting most of the missiles that have been coming in. More recently, though, Ryan, and quite interestingly, has been the introduction of the THAAD system from the US, which has been quite well documented and reported as something that Israel was keen to get in, to buy and to get integrated into what is already quite a phenomenal air defence system. And this has a range out to 150 kilometres, which when you look at the other systems that are in there, doesn't seem to have a massive range. But the idea behind this was that it would bolster some of the other legacy systems. And what I would say is this is quite an extraordinary piece of equipment. This has the ability to target multiple systems, to not be overwhelmed if there were more than two or four or six missiles coming at any one time. And certainly when we look at some of the attacks that we've seen in from Iran, where we've had 100, 200, 300 missiles coming in large salvos, the THAAD system has the ability to target multiple missiles still without the system being overwhelmed, which is something that the adversaries have been quite keen to say that's what they want to do, that's what they want to achieve. They want to overwhelm the Israeli IADS in order to have some of these missiles actually land on their target, and that if they put enough of those missiles up into the airspace, then you know they will overwhelm the system. But that's exactly what THAAD has been brought in to mitigate, to negate this ability to overwhelm the system. So as I say, it hasn't got necessarily maybe a wider range, but certainly the ability to target multiple missiles within the short and medium range. One of the other things that I just want to mention here, Ryan, is that obviously all of these systems cost a lot of money, and the fact that they've been able to integrate it with support from other nations, again, it's one of their aims to bolster their air defense system.
Interesting. Now, I guess I could put a little caveat to this because, you know, as we're having this conversation in real time, there seems to be some negotiations and possibly a ceasefire that has been agreed upon by both Hamas and the Israeli government. And this comes on the heels of ceasefire negotiations that have been ongoing with Hezbollah. So with all these systems that you've talked about, it is possible, maybe not probable yet, but it's highly possible that we could see a persistent cessation of major hostilities. And here's hoping, I guess. So anyway.
Absolutely. And I would say on that, Ryan, in terms of the makeup of the integrated air defense system, is that it is designed also to work in conjunction with the Israeli Civil Aviation Authority in terms of deconfliction, of closure of airspace. So from a client perspective, obviously, if they're when they're concerned about large salvos of missiles coming into the country, or even the slightly unpredictable ones that we see coming in from Yemen that might not necessarily have the accuracy, what I would say is that clients need to be aware that these systems, to be aware of the systems, to know that there are procedures and practices in place so that civil aviation is not affected, or if there is a closure of the airspace or there's a closure of the airports in the region, then clients will be informed as quickly as possible of that closure or of mitigating ideas that need to be put in place and procedures that need to be put in place to keep them out of the potential danger zone.
Yeah, that's very important to note. Interesting. Now, it's also worthy to mention now, I want to bring this up just briefly because I know we're kind of backed up for time, but it is worthy to mention not only there's been headway in obtaining more advanced missile and rocket systems, as we've kind of laid out here over the last few minutes, but there's also been a proliferation of drones that we have seen. And I think most people around the world have kind of noticed, specifically in Eastern Europe, inside Ukraine, and even in and around the borders of Ukraine with Russia, and then also in the Middle East as well. We're starting to see these drones fly with much greater range, more than we had ever anticipated. So can you tell us a little bit about these particular systems that are in play right now, and then what effects they may have on civil aviation?
So if we look at just the Middle East region, we know that reporting has stated that the Houthis have the Samad 3 drone, which again, along with their missiles, has been modified to reach targets within central Israel, but again has a much smaller warhead, and the ranges for the Samad 3 now quoted up to 1,500 kilometers. But I think the drones of interest has really been within the Russia-Ukraine conflict, where initially we were seeing very small drones, very unsophisticated, almost a small missile with a battery pack loaded onto the top of it, a bit of GPS stuck onto the front, and then just sent over the battlefield. And that's what we started off with. And now we've moved into, as you said, much more sophisticated drones with proper wingspans, proper propellant within them, much greater warhead because the system itself can carry a greater weight. And with that, really starting to go into the Russian heartlands, the industrial sectors, and going in vast numbers, these systems are being able to be procured or made relatively at a relatively small cost, and therefore they can get up to swathes within 24 hours, 150, 200 drones going out in waves into the Russia countryside. And similarly back into Ukraine from the Russian side as well. And it really does feel like a full drone warfare going on in these regions. What I would say from an airspace perspective is that when these swathes of drones are going into Russian airspace, the Russian Civil Aviation Authority is implementing a carpet plan where they look to either implement procedures of closing down a number of airfields in that particular region so as to mitigate the drone threat. And I think it's so important to understand that these can be at short notice, that civil aviation should be aware that this is a standard procedure now within Russian airspace, and that it has been implemented early in 2023 when we saw lots of the drones from Ukraine coming and targeting Moscow, that the airports close at very short notice whilst there is the drone threat in the region, and then those procedures are then relinquished. We've seen it even more recently out into the Kursk region, out into the Chechen Republic. This is a standard procedure that's starting to come across. But I think it is also really important to note that the availability and the low cost price of these drones is something that is making the numbers of them so prolific.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point to make. And it, with regards to kind of the blanket closures that the Russian Civil Aviation Authority, as you mentioned, has been doing recently, this is something that we also report on. MedAir Security has been issuing alerts a little more often now, because we're seeing this more often. These drone swarms, or these drones entering Russian airspace, and in response, the Russian authorities are shutting not one airport down for a short period of time, but a number of them, sometimes three, four, or even five airports at a time. So very interesting. And that's something that we're also keeping track of as well. All of this is great and valuable information, Adele. Thank you very much for your time today. And as mentioned at our introduction, this is our inaugural podcast. We aim to provide you with these discussions on a monthly basis, much like our recorded monthly security briefings that we have been providing for some time. However, these podcasts are going to be single subject oriented to provide a little bit more in-depth analysis on subjects affecting aviation. So once again, thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next month. All right, that was awesome.